I'm Justin Mason.
I'm Vic Andrews.
And this is True Country. Today with us on the show is Bobby Tomberlin. Bobby is a Grammy, CMA, and ACM-nominated songwriter with Curb Records in Nashville, Tennessee. Bobby co-wrote the number one country and top five AC single, One More Day, recorded by Diamond Rio, and he is the co-author of an inspirational book by the same title. Bobby has written songs for countless artists, including Daryl Worley, Willie Nelson, Joe Nichols, and Blake Shelton, just to name a few. Bobby's songs have been on numerous films, and we are honored to have him today on the show. Bobby, welcome to True Country.
Well, it's good to be with you guys at True Country. Thanks for having me.
Well, we normally start the show off with an icebreaker question, so Vic, take it away.
I'm nervous. I've heard about these icebreakers. Steve Dorff told me all about it.
Bobby, you've been recorded by the biggest names in your business. Who is the one person you would want to write a song for you?
Now that's a tough one, because I'm always thinking about writing for other people. You know what would be cool is to have, I guess, maybe Willie here.
Nice.
That would be kind of cool. Willie Nelson write a song.
Can't go wrong with that.
You pick a legend. I don't think you can go wrong with it. I think that's cheating is what that is. Well, Bobby, let me just ask you, how did you get started in the business? Did you start playing instruments? Did you start songwriting? How did it all start for you?
Oh, my gosh. You know what? I can't remember a time when I didn't want to be in the music business, or I shouldn't say business, just, you know, be a part of music. I started playing guitar probably when I was like 6 or 7 years old, learning the chords from a couple of my uncles. And I think I sang I Saw the Light, the Hank Williams song, on a tree stump when I was 5, and I was hooked. So, anyway, I don't know. I had a make-believe radio station in my bedroom when I was 5, 6 years old. And I would, you know, have a stack of records, and I literally acted like I was, you know, running a radio shift every afternoon. And I think I really worried my mom and dad. Man leaves this room. He's in there saying, here's Johnny Cash. Here's, you know. And finally, at age 11, I became a disc jockey in my hometown at the radio station there in Luverne, Alabama. And I interviewed people like Johnny Cash and Waylon and Hank Williams Jr. and Keith Whitley. You know, I played all of these great songs. Then I started writing songs. I was a member of the FFA string band, so that kind of exposed me to playing for a crowd. And after high school, I was going to go to college, and I skipped college and went to Muscle Shoals, Alabama. And my roommate was a member of this new group by the name of Shenandoah. And I know, crazy life. And anyway, they just took off. And that was like going to college. That was like a little music college in Muscle Shoals. The writers there, they took up time with me. I learned so much from Marty and Mike McGuire of Shenandoah, and getting to see, you know, how they were conducting their career. Plus, they were songwriters, and they wrote for other artists. And anyway, wrote with some of the people there. A guy by the name of Jim Martin I started writing with. And he left Muscle Shoals. He did an internship at Mel Tillis's publishing company. And Mel liked our songs, and he signed Jim. And then one day I was in Nashville, and he says, hey, man, do you want a deal as well? And I'm like, really? And he says, $100 a week. And I gave my, like, 2 weeks' notice to the radio station in Muscle Shoals. And I came up to Nashville, and I knew I had to make more than $100 a week. So I went to a Kroger grocery store and made another $100 a week. And, you know, people like Diamond Rio, Brooks and Dunn, Patti Loveless, Crystal Gayle, they would come through my checkout line. And then after a few years, I became a sound engineer for Whisperin' Bill Anderson at the Grand Ole Opry. And that was my kind of odd job, you know, to support the songwriting. Wow. And then finally started getting songs recorded.
Going back real quick, how in the heck did an 11-year-old get a job at a studio? I don't have any idea. Was the talent so horrible, or were you just so amazing that they hired an 11-year-old?
Well, it was a little AM radio station, 500-watt AM station, and the gentleman who owned the station, his name is Joe Rex Sport, and he still lives in Luverne, and he would give the high school students an opportunity to work at the radio station after school, and they were in need of a slot to be filled. And I,
there's an 11-year-old kid I know in elementary school. He's going to be really good.
And it was so funny because I really had kind of a deep voice for that time. And oh my gosh, I remember those were some of the greatest days of my life in radio.
So when you got started out, your whole life, you thought you just wanted to be in music. Was there any rhyme or reason to the decisions you were making, or were you just looking for any opportunity you could have when you were young?
That's a good question. I guess radio was the only option, you know, back in my hometown. And then I just started, you know, doing interviews and then finally made a visit to Nashville. And I just knew this is where I wanted to be. And I knew radio would kind of help, you know, clear that path, open up that path for me, you know, from meeting different songwriters and different people in the business. And it was a big help.
Was that the biggest help to you starting out, was meeting as many people as you could?
Yeah, because, again, I met so many people who ended up being a link, you know, a link to Muscle Shoals. I met a guy in radio in South Alabama by the name of Billy Henderson, who was my link to Muscle Shoals, Alabama. He had written for Fame Studios, had songs recorded by people like Jerry Reed. He knew the Shenandoah guys, so that kind of was a connection there. And then, of course, the guy I mentioned a moment ago, Jim Martin, he was my link to Nashville. So it's just getting out there and meeting people. You never know. I mean, I didn't always think, oh, gosh, this guy could help me get to Nashville, or this one can help, you know, introduce me to someone. It's just, again, just putting yourself out there, and sometimes you just have a lucky day and meet the right person.
When you were writing songs down there before Mel signed you, or I guess when Mel signed you, were you writing with someone in particular most of the time, or were you writing by yourself? What was the process?
At that time, I mentioned the guy Jim Martin. He and I had written several songs. A guy by the name of Billy Henderson, he had the big hit 10,000 Angels for Mindy McCready, and he had had songs recorded again by Jerry Reed and T.G. Shepherd, and he took up time and was really a mentor. And when I moved to Muscle Shoals, I met a guy by the name of Mark Narmore on my very first day there. Mark ended up writing the big hit That's What I Love About Sunday for Craig Morgan, and wow, he's had other hits. On my second day in Muscle Shoals, I met Stephen Del Jones. He was a loan officer at a bank, and we ended up writing One More Day for Diamond Rio together. And he and I now write for the same publishing company, and Mark Narmore, we write, you know, at least once a month after all this time.
My goodness. So who'd you meet on day three?
Well, day three, I think it was Bob Dylan.
McCartney and Dylan, we did a little three-way ride on that.
It sounds like you had a lot of success early on. What were some of the roadblocks or the stumbling blocks that you encountered along the way?
Oh, gosh. You know what? The same roadblocks that are out there today, really. I mean, you know, I came here, I was signed with Mel Tillis' publishing company, and just trying to get songs through the, you know, through the system. You know, you've got the manager has to like the song, the artist, the producer, the record company. I mean, you have to kind of go through all of those channels most of the time, unless you're just such a big superstar, you're going to call the shot. So kind of the same roadblocks, you know, it's like starting over every day.
Now, you did a whole lot of other things, too, aside from, and we'll get into that, but you're writing songs for a lot of people, and then all of a sudden it kind of starts taking off. What was the big song that triggered it? Was it One More Day that really started getting the wheels in motion where you said, wow, I think this is happening now. The dreams that I had, I think they're starting to come to fruition.
Well, my first songs that were recorded were by Linda Davis. You remember Linda had the big hit, yeah, Does He Love You with Reba, and she's had other hit songs. She was the first one to record a song. And actually, I wrote that song with Stephen Del Jones, too. And it was a top 40 single. So that really gave me a lot of, a confidence. And I thought, wow, well, we did it one time, we can do it again. And then, you know, Shelley Wright recorded something, Billy Dean, and just kept on, you know, thinking one of these days, hopefully I'm going to hit the radio and land really a big song. But One More Day, no doubt, that changed my life. That wasn't just another, number one single. I mean, it's a song that has just, it still has a lot of life in it today. And there's not a week that goes by that we don't receive emails from people, you know, who used it maybe for a memorial service or, you know, and that's been really one of the coolest things is actually, it's great to have a number one record, a hit song, but for it to actually touch people, that's the kind of thing you just can't, it just has to happen naturally. I mean, you can't set out really to do that.
Yeah.
And that's been huge. And it changed my life as far as people I wrote with as well. After that, you know, I was able to write with so many writers that I couldn't have written with before.
How does it change for you along those lines, being in demand? When you write a song like that, then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, who's this Bobby guy? I want him to write a song for me. I mean, is it kind of like that now? You kind of get pushed to the top of the list?
You know what? It's not normal. It's not normal because one day, again, after years, you're struggling, you're hoping for something like that to happen, and then one day it does. And then you're getting a phone call from BMI saying, hey, do you want to go to Los Angeles and work with Paul Williams, who wrote these hits for the Carpenters? Or you want to write with Mac Davis, who had these Elvis hits and, you know, he was in so many of the movies. And then, oh, do you want to write with this guy who has the current Brooks and Dunn hit, the Faith hit? And it's just like, oh, my gosh. It's a little overwhelming, to be honest with you.
Feel like you win the lottery? Is that kind of the feeling?
Yeah, I mean, your life, it really does change. And it's just, it kind of can spin out of control if you're not careful. I mean, you've got to try to stay humble. and I haven't had a problem with that. I mean, to this day, I stop by the Kroger grocery store that I used to work at, and I go in and I just think about those days. I was never one of those guys that got out of hand with my ego. I'm just thankful. I just look at it like it was just a big blessing. And I'm very thankful.
So if those first few hits were a turning point in your career, can you remember some of the formative moments that led you to be able to write those songs?
You know what? Being true to myself. You know, it's easy to try to chase trends. It's easy to hear a song on the radio that's a big record and you think, oh gosh, I've got to write one like that. But when I'm just true to me, and really do what I do, that's when I've had the most success. And in the case of One More Day, or really, for the most part, any song that I've been a part of, you know, as cheesy and trite as it may sound, just really from the heart, you know?
Well, man, we're pretty early in this conversation, but I think we just found out what true country is to Bobby Timberland. Normally we say that for the end. But no, that's great, and that's a really great perspective, and we love hearing that, and that's part of the reason that we started doing this podcast, is to hear from people like yourself that really do that and have done that throughout their entire career and been successful at it. So we appreciate that perspective.
Absolutely.
And Bobby, if I can ask you, along that journey, there's highs and lows. What was one of the lowest points in that journey for you?
That's a good question. No one's ever asked me that before. As far as the journey, musically, I've been blessed to always have a publishing deal. Now, I'm not saying that I've just always made great money or anything. I mean, believe me, a lot of struggles. But even during the struggles, I never looked at that like a roadblock or a low point. For the most part, my heartaches have been in the form of losing dear friends, a lot of them being in the music business. I lost a dear friend a little over a year ago, Andrew Dorff, you know, and his father, Steve Dorff, who was on your show. That was a tremendous loss. People like little Jimmy Dickens, he was like a granddad to me. And if I were in town, I would actually drive him out to the Grand Ole Opry the last two or three years of his life. And Phil Everly of the Everly Brothers, he was another great friend. I just feel very blessed to have known these people. And there's a huge void there with them missing in my life now.
To flip that question, was it those relationships and those people in your life that kept you going in the music business, or what was the highest point or the best part of this journey to date?
Oh my gosh, I've had a lot of highs. I mean, of course, the success of One More Day and it being a song that really could help people, that was huge. We were nominated for a Grammy, and that really wasn't the big high for me, just having the Grammy nomination. I honestly can tell you, I really didn't care if we won or not. The cool thing, the real award there, was sitting in the room, and on the same row, there's Earl Scruggs, a bluegrass legend. There's Alison Krauss. There's Bonnie Raitt. I felt like, wow, maybe finally, you know, I've arrived. playing on the Opry, singing with Loretta Lynn last year. That was a really big high for me. Barbara Streisand recording a song that I wrote with Steve Dorff. So there have been many highs, but the friendships were the highest. I mean, that's been the highest of the highs for the friendships. And I'm not talking about just stars. I'm talking about wonderful people, musicians, you know, people that I've met in this business. I'm not talking just the artists. There have been great writers and engineers, and it's just been a real blessing.
Now, if you had to start over, because you've been in the business a while and the industry has changed a lot, if you had to start over today in the music business, but you had all the knowledge, same knowledge in your head, what would you do differently, if anything, or how would you approach tackling being a songwriter or an entertainer in the modern industry right now?
Oh, I would have definitely gone to college. I wouldn't have skipped out. No, I'm kidding about that. You know what? I can honestly also tell you that I wouldn't change anything. I wouldn't. I've thought about that before, and there's nothing I would change.
That's fantastic. That's the mark of a good career right there, and a great journey.
Absolutely.
It's not about chart positions. That's not my God. I mean, we definitely want hit songs. We want to be on great projects, because that keeps our deal. That keeps our publishing deal. Plus, it's nice to have some spending money, but you know, but that's not my, I don't worship that. I mean, you strive for that, but it's about, for me, it's about friendships, being happy, going out on the road, playing some shows, making some new friends, seeing some sights that I've never seen before.
Now, aside from music, but part of the music business, you were on CMT's The Singing Bee. How did that all come up? Because you were on there for about, what, 5 years? Or, I mean, it was quite some time.
Yes, 5 seasons. And oh, my gosh, Steve Dorff was the music director.
Oh, Steve Dorff, you son of a gun here.
A reoccurring name here. But, we, you know, we've been buddies for quite a while now. Really great friend. And I definitely count him as part of my family. He and his family. And anyway, they approached him about being the music director. He says, we need a country guy with a voice, you know, that can sing the Johnny Cash, Hank Williams Jr., Waylon Jennings songs. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. So I did like a short little video of, I think, singing a Hank Williams Jr. song. And then I ended up getting the gig. And I mean, literally like in a 2-day period of time, they're like, oh, you need to be in LA. Wow. Fly out Saturday. We're going to have rehearsal Sunday night. And it was just a whirlwind. And next thing you know, we're on a successful TV show on CMT. And that was unlike, I'm sure I'll never experience anything quite like that. Because I think usually things are a little more planned out. But it was like, come on, hang on for your life and let's go.
It sounds fun, though. It could be worse. There's worse things in the world.
No. It was a lot of fun. Yeah. But it was a challenge. I mean, literally being thrown in there to learn a couple of hundreds of songs, parts of, oh yeah. And we would have these rehearsals that would go till midnight, and then we'd have to be up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And then we would have rehearsals for that day's show. And Melissa Peterman, of course, was the host. She was great. The other singers and band members, they were awesome also.
Bobby, you've got your album Out of Road out now. You've got the film that you've been working on. What are you doing today?
Well, actually, I can't really make the full announcement, but I just heard today that the film Wheeler that I was involved in, that Steven Dorff, Steve's son, Steven, and Chris Christopherson was a co-star in, a big cable company is going to be picking that up, it looks like.
And congratulations.
Yeah, and it'll continue the life of the film. Of course, it was released to select theaters. It's still on demand. And plus, it's available now, iTunes, so you can get the DVD. But I'm really happy that that's going to have the extended life. And once it's on a cable, you know, once it's on cable, it will live, you know, for many, many years. And I'm really proud about that. Still promoting my CD, doing some shows, writing songs. I have new songs recorded by Tyler Farr, who's on Sony. Sundance Head, who's with who won The Voice, Runaway June, Dylan Scott, Mo Pitney, Pam Tillis, Whisperin' Bill Anderson. He just recorded a song that we wrote for a special project he's doing. John Snyder from the Dukes of Hazzard. He's just actually recorded a new project and recorded 5 songs, and he's singing better than ever. And then Hillary Williams, Hank Williams Jr.'s daughter, she's recorded a song that we wrote, and her project's coming out in the end of May. And boy, she's a great singer.
Yeah, I think we've actually talked to her manager about getting her on the show when she comes out with her new CD. I don't know when that's going to be, but
great.
And speaking of Steve, real quick, because you talked about it, Steve mentioned when we were talking to him that I guess he didn't really play his songs that much in front of people, and that you and him or y'all had a conversation about, you know, start playing your stuff out in front of people. And so now he plays out and does that. Was that something that somebody had to talk you into doing, or did you just naturally want to start playing? And then you said, hey, Steve, be like me. Let's do this. Come on, start playing out on the road with me.
No, you know, that's really funny. I didn't play for many years. After I moved to Nashville, I could count on one hand how many times I played for the first 10 years. And then after One More Day hit, I received a phone call from this guy, and he says, hey, we're having a special benefit tonight. I forget what it was for, but he said, would you come over and do this songwriter round? And he says, I'm not really sure who all is in the round, but it's buddies, people you know. So I get there, and there's Richard Marx, the pop star that had many, many hits.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to run. I wanted to just run. Actually, I thought, during the first song, I'm like, wonder what would happen if I just literally grabbed it. I hadn't played, and here he is.
It's Richard Marx. I mean, that's not fair. Yeah, he's a pretty
well-known
artist.
No, it's not fair. But anyway, after that, it was like just, you know, I just started doing a lot of shows. And in the past 5 years, I probably do about 50 to 60 shows a year, from Alaska, California to, you know, Florida and all over the place. So.
Was that an easy transition for you, having written songs for other people, to go out and promote your own album, your own material, and work as a performer?
It's been pretty easy because for a few years I was able to kind of do the whole Bluebird Cafe thing, and I've really learned by watching people like Bill Anderson, even watching Hank Jr. I'm definitely not comparing myself to Hank Jr. or Bill, but watching them when they do their intimate part of their show with their guitar, you know, they're great. People like that are great teachers. They're great people to watch, because what I learned from people like Hank and Bill, they just talk to the crowd. They treat them like friends. They act like it's one big living room. And so that's kind of the approach that I've taken. And I've really been having a blast going out there and playing, and it inspires me. I'm not one of those writers that I don't do very well staying on Music Row week after week, appointment after appointment. I mean, I do that, but I have to break away, and I kind of sprinkle, you know, shows in all through the year.
Well, at this point, we normally we affectionately call this portion of the show the campfire segments of the show, and let me give you a little backstory on it, because normally what happens for the people who come in studio is we have a great interview. We go out there. Sometimes we sing and, you know, play music and talk and drink a little bit. And then they tell these awesome stories. And we always say, why the hell didn't you say that when we were recording? So if we were sitting around playing some music or telling stories, what is a cool story, fun story that you have from your years in the business that you could pull out and tell us about?
You know, the first story that comes to my mind, and I have a lot of really cool stories, but I guess it would involve Phil Everly of the Everly Brothers, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Country Music Hall of Fame member. He and his brother inspired Simon and Garfunkel, the Beatles, and so many more, Tom Petty. Well, anyway, I became friends with Phil after One More Day was a hit. And so I get a phone call one Sunday afternoon, and he was at his home in Columbia, Tennessee, about 45 minutes out of Nashville. And he was like, what are you doing today? I'm like, nothing. He says, get down to Columbia as soon as possible. And I'm thinking, wow, wonder what this is about. So I drive down. He comes out, gets in my car, and he's like, drive to Walmart. I'm like, Walmart? And we go to Walmart, and do you know those little machines when you walk in with a little, what do you call that, the claw machines?
Yeah.
Where you can pick up watches?
Uh-huh.
He handed me a $20 bill, and he was like, I love these machines. And we stood there for like an hour and a half, and he was addicted to those machines. I mean, and here's a guy, and he loved to wear sweatpants. He was at a point in his life like, man, I've been touring since I was a kid. And he really, that was just a joy to him to get to go to Walmart. Anyway, I didn't get a watch, but he did, and he handed me the watch, and I'm like, I can't take your watch. And we get home, and he was like, oh, no, take my watch. And he opens up this drawer, and there's probably 30 watches.
Oh, man, somebody should buy him a machine for his house and just let him play all day long.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's as real as it gets. And again, I'm thinking this guy inspired, you know, Paul McCartney told Phil Everly the first time he met him, he's like, hey, I was you and Don, and John was Don. So, but I thought, how cool is that, that he could enjoy something that much?
That is cool.
Yeah, that's a pretty unique one. I don't think we've heard that before. Well, Bobby, your career speaks for itself. We touched on it briefly earlier before, but we like to end every episode with the perspective of our guest. What is true country to you?
True country to me, just when you ask me true country, I immediately think Hank Williams Sr. I think Merle Haggard. I think Mo Pidney, this new artist that I've been working with. It's on Curb Records. He's had a couple of singles. That's the definition of true country to me.
What makes it true country in your mind? Is it a sound? Is it a personality? Is it the artists themselves? Is it something in the music?
I think it's honesty. I think it's honesty. Honesty like Hank Williams singing Cold, Cold Heart or I Can't Help It If I'm Still in Love with You. I think it's honesty like Don Williams singing What Do You Do with Good Old Boys Like Me. I think it's honesty like Keith Whitley's, you know, singing Don't Close Your Eyes.
That is true country to Bobby Tomberlin.
Well, Bobby, at this point, we're going to do the world famous or infamous 30-second true country shot clock. Are you ready?
I'm really nervous.
All right, let's begin. What is the nickname of your favorite instrument?
Hot rod.
What is the instrument you wish you could play?
Piano, and I've been dabbling with it a little bit, but that's the one instrument I'd love to really perfect.
What is the best concert you ever attended?
The Eagles at the Forum in Los Angeles 4 years ago.
Whose tour bus would you like to hang out on?
Well, I would have said Willie's, but I actually did get to hang on it a couple of years ago.
If you could only listen to three artists for the rest of your life, who would they be?
Oh, God. Merle Haggard, James Taylor, and Hank Williams Jr.
And quick, what is in Toby Keith's red solo cup?
Purple Kool-Aid.
Purple Kool-Aid it is, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it here first. Bobby knows from experience. Well, Bobby, thank you so much for being on the show. If people want to find you, where can they find you on the internet?
BobbyTomberlinMusic.com and, of course, on Facebook and on Instagram, you know, all over the place.
And where can they find the movie Wheeler if they want to see it?
Okay, they can find it online. They can order the DVD, Amazon, and also iTunes.
Well, perfect, ladies and gentlemen. Go see that movie. We're going to do the same. On behalf of myself and Vic, thank you so much, Bobby, for being on the show. We really appreciate your time, sir.
Well, thank you, guys. This has actually been a lot of fun.
Well, thank you very much. Well, my name is Justin Mason.
I'm Vic Andrews.
And this is True Country.